Thanks for listening to Leadership Level Up. I'm Brian Prairie.
And I'm Dr. Jeff Williamson.
I am just starting my leadership journey.
And I've been guiding leaders for 30 years.
Our podcast aims to shine a spotlight on outstanding leaders and provide a platform for them to describe their leadership journey and share the guiding principles that have helped them become great leaders.
Welcome to Leadership Level Up Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Williamson. Great to have you with us. As always, we're talking leadership today, and I have a guest with me that you're going to enjoy hearing from. A lot of experiences, a lot of insights on leadership. We're really happy to have Dr. Santor Nishizaki with us. We've been friends for a few years now. We'll get more into that as we chat. But let me tell you a little bit about him. He is an author. He has released a book in recent months called Working with Gen Z. We're going to talk about that some. That's absolutely an interesting read. I have my copy. I've read it. A handbook to recruit, retain, and reimagine the future workforce after COVID-19. There's a lot of good stuff there. He's also a keynote speaker. He's founder and CEO of Mulholland Consulting Group and also teaches from time to time at Pepperdine University. He's a busy dude. He's a contributing writer to Entrepreneur Media. There's a whole other page I could go on, but I'm going to pause there and just, you know, they're impressed enough. So I'm going to say, welcome, man. It's always great talking to you. Good to see your smiling face again.
Thank you so much for having me on today, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we've had a lot of conversations on Zoom with you in California and me near Chicago, just because we like to hang out and talk about things that matter. So I'm excited to capture some of that today and share this with people who follow you, people who follow us and listen to what we're talking about. So as I mentioned in the opening, we're all about leadership. I love leadership. I love elevating, developing, encouraging, investing in people. I know you care about those things too. And so I'm always interested to hear when did leadership kind of start catching your eye or catching your ear and thinking, man, this is something that's intentional and not naturally something that people are good at sometimes. So when did you first think back? It came, you were probably on the playground one day and thought, you know what? Somebody's got to take charge here. I don't know. But what's your story on that?
Actually, Jeff, that's funny because you think growing up as a kid, leadership is about being bossy, right? Being the one that's telling everyone. But I actually never really saw myself as a leader probably until my senior year in high school. I had my leadership epiphany, which was, I played volleyball in high school and I was elected to be the team captain. And I remember it was a preseason game and we ended up losing. I had a great game, a lot of good stats. And in California, volleyball is actually popular. I don't know if it is in anywhere else in the world.
It's worked its way here.
It's gaining some popularity in the Midwest. Okay. You know, we used to play on the beach and stuff during summer. It was a lot of fun. And I remember my stats didn't matter because we lost the game. And that was when I had an epiphany and realized my job has shifted to being one of the best skill players into being a cheerleader, being a coach on the court and helping our team win. Because I like winning more than anything. I mean, Jeff, my number one strength is competition. So to me, winning, being first, if you're not first, you're last. More now as I got older, it's become more internal, right? Mm-hmm. On personal and professional development. But back then I like winning more than, and it was, if I had to sacrifice my stats to focus more on my team, I realized that. And that's what leadership is. It's all about lifting others up around you and putting yourself as secondary.
Yeah. When we understand it's a we thing. And then what I heard you talking about some there too, although you didn't say this specifically, is you took on that responsibility that, you know what, if I have less of an individually huge year and we win every match, I don't care.
Yep. Yeah. And we ended up going on to have one of the best records in the school's history, won a league championship. I still had some of the best stats. Ironically, even though I was really focused, we have to shift to the rest of the team. And and we had a great group of guys that year too. So,
and I think it plays so well, whether it's in that athletic setting, and then we take it into, be it the classroom, we take it into organizations, et cetera, and we transfer that idea, that reality that, you know, this is a we thing. And if we all win, nobody cares. You know, it's like if we're successful and we achieve our goals as a team, that's different. And as you know, if you've got a group of individuals who are not a team and you got 6-7 people that are worried about getting my stats and getting mine, it's going to be ugly at some point. And so, yeah, I love that metaphor and that time that it kind of came on for you where you said, wow, my role has changed now because my friends and teammates around me have chosen to put me in this spot where I have a different role, and that's to be leader.
Yeah, and cool. that also, you know, was having our team watch film on our own and doing things on our own to make sure that we got there. And like you said, winning, or it could be from an organizational setting, achieving goals, sales quotas as a team, how can we use each other's strengths to help win? And that's in my lens. Everyone else might have different types of lens, but as competition as number one, that's the way I see
it. Yeah. Well, I have to say my number one is maximizer. So, you know, in this space of teacher, trainer, coach, educator, that goes so well with, you know, helping lift other people up, which to me is what leadership is about. I mean, leadership is influence, and the ways that you and I can influence people are going to be different, but man, we can make that music play together, and be the best us that we are. And that's when it's really fun, when everybody understands their role and they're doing what they're really good at, and there's space for other people to do the same thing. That's when we maximize talent and go, wow, I thought we were a pretty good team before, but we found a next level that we didn't even know we had.
Continuous improvement. It's my number six too, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. So besides that time where you kind of went, wow, I have a role as a leader now, and at least realizing it for the first time, I'm sure there were some people in your growing up years, maybe your college professional years, you would say, you know, that was somebody that was an exemplary leader to me. And here's some things that they did where I thought, man, I want to do that. I want to be intentionally that way as a leader. Some things come to mind.
Yeah. I had one person that I worked for who was like the number senior vice president at an organization. And to this day is one of my favorite leaders. And I remember we had an open house for where I worked. And we were allowed to bring our families, and it's a very secretive place. I can't say, but
it's okay.
And he greeted each family member and stood outside while everyone was waiting in line and talked to people. And he really cared about people and putting people first. The work still needed to get done, but I'd say to this day, he's one of the best leaders. I've had a ton of great leaders and a ton of bad leaders. It just kind of depends on how you look at it too. And I always think you can learn from even the bad leaders. I mean, they might have a technical skill set that you can learn from, so, or how not to do it, especially if you're early in your career, if anyone's listening, what not to do. So,
yeah. Well, and a little self-disclosure, I look back at me in my late 20s, my first director's job, my first time of having reports. And I'm thinking now, it's like, oh my goodness, I think I need to find these people and apologize to them that my intentions were good, but I was terrible at some aspect of leading a team or handling things. And I suppose that's part of our journey is I go, wow, I don't want to be that kind of leader. I don't want to do that kind of thing. And I'm better now. So at least someone can say, man, I don't want to do that. Yeah.
And Jeff too, right? It's having compassion for those people, because a lot of the time, I think the statistic is almost 60% of leaders never receive training the first time they're promoted to supervise people, because we promote people based on their individual type of expertise or technical expertise. And then we just throw them in these roles. And I'm preaching to the choir here, but we know with Gallup, right? It's like one in two people will quit their job due to the direct supervisor. And then 70% of employee engagement is due to the direct supervisor, but yet we don't train them. So I look back and to see some of those leaders that I had that were not good, I don't think they went through the proper training, or if they didn't care, then they're the wrong person for that role. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm similarly passionate about leadership development. You know, going back to my years teaching full-time in higher ed, was in a program that was for people exactly like that. It was a management master's program where it would be like, oh, you're a great programmer. You're a great software developer. And now we're going to put you in charge of the team of 10 software developers, and you got to manage, lead, and guide those people. And sometimes people just die because they don't even know where to start. They're like, I can do all this stuff, but I don't know how to lead people. And so that's where leadership development training comes in, is that we can say, hey, you know, you're a technical expert. Let me walk with you and teach you and help you be able to then communicate that as a leader to a team, rather than just being, hey, you're the person who's been the longest in the department.
Seniority doesn't always mean the best person for the job. I mean, I think, but that is something to tap into from a knowledge transfer. And but yeah, sometimes, and not everyone wants to be a leader. It's unfortunate that we kind of dangle this pay raise in front of them, but it doesn't mean you're a failure if you're not in a supervisor position, because it's really a selfless position to be in that. And a lot of people don't want to deal with that or hear people's problems. Like, that's actually one of the key things you have to do to build trust, is to listen to people and hear them out.
Oh, that's a good nugget too. And I absolutely true. Listen and learn. You know, one of the earliest things that I learned that I do look back on and think, okay, that was a good call. Whoever shared that with me, thank you, wherever you are, was when I would meet with my reports, which there were like half a dozen in my first director's job. I would do a weekly one-on-one, and I would just ask them three questions: what's going well, what's not going well, and how can I help you?
Yeah.
And then just take notes. And again, it's listening. It's saying, where are you at? What do you need? I'm an advocate. I'm here for you. How can I help you? And I think that's a different take than it's like, okay, here's what you're going to do, where you're just giving orders to people and they don't have that creativity or that space to be who they are and use their top strengths themselves.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned up the top, you know, you've done significant research. We talked in the middle of your book process a few months back, and you had some fascinating data. You learned a lot about the Gen Z workforce and how the needs, the preferences are different, and that we need to know what some of those things are. So when you look through the lens of what you've learned from your book research and the work that you've done, what does leadership look like now in 2023, especially to a generation of Gen Z workers who are willing to ask for some things that I think we've all probably wanted a long time ago in our work, but this generation is willing to say, hey, this is important to me, and I'd really like this to be an aspect or not be an aspect of my work. Talk to us about some of the things that you learned from your book process.
Thanks, Jeff. I think a lot of, with different generations, I think we all want the same thing. But I like to call it, it's like a volume, right? We turn up the volume on certain types of topics. Or if you have kids, maybe millennials, we want more work-life balance. We want to work from home more often because the commute sucks. But I'd say with Gen Z specifically, they really want a culture of that focuses on our well-being. And same with millennials, wanted that too. And I think you ask any Gen Xer or baby boomer, I'm sure they would want the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's becoming a must and a requirement, where pre-pandemic, it's, yeah, okay, we'll do our best, but now it's becoming a requirement. I think another thing too that they really want is to have more flexibility. And also what we saw, but now we saw during the pandemic, hey, by the way, we can work from home and we can be empowered to do that and we can get our job done. So I think what leaders need to do is have clear expectations of what's required for them. And then Gen Zers and all generations, really, you have to produce. If working from home is a privilege, and you need to be able to produce whatever workflow it is and have those conversations with your manager and your leader to say, okay, what do you expect me to get done? Because, you know, as you know, Jeff, and I know, some of our best ideas happen when we're on a morning walk or when we're at the gym.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really important to allow that flexibility, but leaders, they have to be met halfway by employees and on producing good work.
And what you're right. You're so right. When that's identified ahead of time to say, this is a written proposal of this volume with this structure, and here's the timeline when I need it, first draft, second draft. Or if it's, hey, you're doing claim assessment and you need to do X number of day. If we know those kinds of things ahead of time, then people can say, okay, I can do that. Or if I'm struggling to do that, then we have a dialogue to say, how can we help you be more efficient? But I think that's so key, that if we know those deliverables and the expectations ahead of time, then we can tackle those, and then we can most likely be successful and get those done to where our supervisors saying, you know what, before what, January, March, 2020, we thought, nah, everybody got to be under the same roof. Where now we're like, yeah, sometimes we do. Sometimes that's fantastic just because we enjoy it. But look at all the things now that we've been able to do because we had to. But then after the fact, so to speak, we're still finding ways to be successful. It'll be productive, even in different places from California to Chicago.
And Jeff, you know, good points, definitely. And I'd like to add one thing to that, which is Gen Z, at the statistics show, they're growing up 3 years slower than previous generations. So their interpersonal skills may not be as developed as, let's say, millennials or previous generations, because they grew up with screens and we did not. I remember MySpace. I don't know if you remember that, Jeff, or maybe your kids.
Oh, I've been around long enough to remember that.
I don't know if your kids had it.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thanks for making me seem that young. But,
well, you know, yeah. all those.
I remember dial-up. Let's
music
just be
videos.
Honest.
Okay, I remember that too. Remember, if someone's on the phone, you hear, it's like, get off the phone.
I need to do something.
Yeah, I remember when DSL came out, it was like a godsend. And so looking at, if you grew up communicating via text or social media, we need to be, it's, there's a lot of practice we, this generation needs. And some of them are fantastic, right? We don't want to stereotype an entire generation. These are just some of the trends that or common themes that we've seen, but they actually want more time. Some of them want more time in the office. So leaders, I know you may want to work from home, but if your team wants more FaceTime, I think you need to be there for them as much as possible, even though it may be more convenient for you to work from home because you can, but they're going to need that mentoring and coaching that we remember that we got when we first entered the workplace. Sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it can't be done as well. It can be, but not as well on Zoom, because there's a lot of things, and people are multitasking when they're on Zoom or Teams, or they don't even have their cameras on. Jeff, have you been on a lot of calls this during the pandemic where people don't turn their cameras on?
Oh yeah. And that drives me crazy, to be honest. I'm just like, man, if I can't see you, I don't even know if you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to even read emotions. It's almost like a one-way communication. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I would advise leaders to be available in person as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And our research found that about 3 in 4 Gen Zers want a hybrid work schedule.
Yeah.
I think hybrid is really the future of work. I think we just need to be intentional on how we schedule time in person. What are we doing? I mean, how many meetings can we cut out? How can we minimize lack of productivity? Because so Jeff, you're in academia. How much time is wasted on meetings or committees to talk about meetings?
Oh my goodness. One of my previous locations, not where I am now. I can remember the time when the senior leader and was talking about this. I thought he's joking, but he wasn't. And the information was that we have so many committees at our university that we're going to form a committee to evaluate committees. And I thought, okay, I'm waiting for the drum shot, you know, the rim shot. Hey, just kidding. They weren't kidding. They formed another committee to look at why we have so many committees. And I thought, deliver me, Lord. I mean, look at the ones, look at what they do. Look at who doesn't show up for them, and just get rid of them. Get rid of the committees.
Yeah, I really think if we cut down a lot of that meeting time, we could leave more time for doing things that matter, which is coaching, collaborating, sure, making agendas and sticking to them. But I think getting more FaceTime with this younger generation is important, and all the leaders need to commit.
Yeah. And in our organization, you know, we're always trying to figure that out too, because, you know, we just recently were looking at, okay, we need to be more intentional on certain days each month. We're going to have a meal together on a certain day of the month or a certain day each week, if at all possible, be in the office that day. And it's just one day. And the rest of the time we're all flying in different directions. But I think you're right, is that having some face time, some personal time, may not be valuable to everybody, but it's valuable to all of us. If I could, that sounds like a confusing statement, but it's like the we part of us is, it is important to occasionally have some connection, in my humble opinion. So you're right. I think hybrid is, may not be everybody's choice. I mean, I know some, even some of my own children have said, if my full-time remote job ever gets forced to go to the office, I'm giving my 2 weeks the day that comes out. And I respect that because it works for where they are.
Yeah, it depends on where you are in your career, mm-hmm. where you are in your life, where you are in the country. That's another thing too, is the cost of living for this generation. Well, for actually everyone in America right now. But I mean, I live in Los Angeles. I think the median housing price, house price, is like $1 million.
Yeah, right.
I mean, how is this generation going to achieve buying their first house? And I worry about that. So looking at companies maybe locating or having more regional offices or headquarters in a more affordable climate.
Yeah. I mean, we have mutual friends that who have, you know, pulled up from areas like that and moved to the middle of Iowa or the middle of Nebraska or places like that, that are just much more affordable and a different quality of life. And that's not slamming the places they moved from, but it's just that they realized, you know, based on the mobility and the flexibility that we can have these days to work in remote scenarios, it's like, gosh, if I can buy a pretty nice farmhouse in the middle of Iowa and put $100,000 into renos in it, and it's still half of what I would have paid on one of the coasts or one of the major cities.
A shed.
they're willing to do that because they realize, you know, that the quality of life is a big deal. And I think that's something we've learned as leaders too, is it isn't just pandemic. It isn't just like, hey, suck it up, that's your job, because people will walk. And they will. So as leaders, we have to factor in those things. Like, you know, we may want to hold fast to some expectations we have, but if nobody wants to work under those circumstances, we're all doomed. We need each other. We need our staff. We need our team. We need our workers. And so I think that's where we have to just be willing to say, you know, it's a new day and we need to look at new models or new approaches, because we can't do what we do without our people. And
Jeff, right? Yeah. I mean, it's been a few years for us to figure this out. I think the best companies are the ones that have. Mm. And I think, well, a lot of things change too. Being able to be agile and flexible is important. But I think a lot of people who work remotely, like you said, your kids, I think it's out of necessity, really, if they want to afford a house and not want to pay rent. Mm-hmm. And this generation, Gen Z, is extremely educated, because they've had access to the internet. I was just talking to my son, to my oldest son today. It's like, man, just when I was growing up, all the limit of what we could understand and read about was to the what was on TV or the library. And now it's democratized information, which is great. And that's what I love about this generation, is they can figure out so many different things.
Yeah. And grew up with Google, right? So so many times I'll be in a conversation and I'll say something that might just be my personal opinion, and I'll see my wife or my kids are like, I don't think so. You know,
yep.
They're going right to, they're going to Google it. They're going to go, that's not true. What you just said, I found it, you know.
On that point though, I think this is important for Gen Z to understand, and what as older generations, we need to help them with, is to help them discriminate from what's good information and what's bad information. Mm-hmm. That's really important, because you don't want them research, really. And that's, I think, one of the advantages of college. And I guess we're a little biased, Jeff. I think we as educators, we could do better as far as preparing them for the workplace. But and that's a program that I've actually helped launch at one of the schools I teach at. But I think that's when we do research, we could find out really what's a good source and what's not. Someone's influencers Instagram doesn't count as, or even on, I mean, there's studies, have you seen that, Jeff, on TikTok, of how Gen Zers are self-diagnosing, I'm this and I'm that, based on TikTok. That's, you know, you have to go to a mental health professional to get diagnosed. And so I think it's important of the fake information out there that we, older generation, we need to help, because they may go cite a source that's not good and then cite that to a client, and then it's going to make us not look good as a company.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't want to neglect to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your own podcast. You have a podcast as well, called The Zillennial Leader. I love how you blended millennial and Gen Z together. Talk to us about that. Where did that start? And what's some of the things you've discovered as you've hosted that?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. And I'm glad you caught that, because Zillennial is actually another like on the cusp generation, but I combined those to be accessible for Gen Z and millennials, as well as anyone else who wants to listen. So what I did is I created this podcast. It's actually a preview of one of my next book, which is a how-to guide for first-time and emerging leaders. I wanted a little bit of a newer approach and something that's more, I guess, relevant and current today. I love the classics, but I wanted to kind of hear from Gen Zers and millennials what they think about leadership. Really millennials, but some Gen Zers mixed in. So it's all about how we lead ourselves, how we lead others, and how we lead within organizations. And we even had the CNN Hero of the Year on our podcast, and she's doing some amazing work in Africa, and then an Olympic medal winner and a couple others. I'm hoping to start recording season two, but probably won't happen till next year.
It's going to be a while.
I'm working also on a book about mental health in the workplace and post-pandemic with a clinical psychologist and a psychiatrist. So that's, we already did a study, and to be continued.
So I'll fill you in once that comes out. Yeah. We'll have to have you back sometime.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could bring them on too.
That'd be cool too.
The psychologist and psychiatrist, because they're amazing human beings too, and I love collaborating with them.
Hey, they're your people. I'm in.
Same here.
Yeah, exactly. One more question here. We could go all afternoon, but one more question here for you before I let you go. I always enjoy asking those of us who've had a few more laps around life's track, so to speak. And you're way younger than me, just for the record. But when we look back to, say, a 21-year-old Santor, what advice would you give now to that 21-year-old guy that was you back then?
I love that question, Jeff. I think that's one of the ones that I ask my participants too, or my guests. 21-year-old Santor, I would say, your career is not a complete straight line trajectory. And that goes for everyone in here. I mean, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I think it's an author. I don't know. It could be a TEDx speaker soon. But just be patient. I think patience is one of the biggest things, and really get a chance to build relationships with folks. I did that naturally because I have Woo as a, in my top 10, winning over others' strength. But yeah, there's not a straight line. And also, I didn't even get my first mentor till I was probably 24 or 25. So get a mentor earlier. And that's something that I've instilled with my mentor, with my undergrads, is one of the classes they're required to have a mentor every semester. So get a mentor earlier. Yeah. So, and as I have an article I could share with you later, Jeff, I said, it's like mentoring lessons learned from Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid. So I could share it. I wrote it for Entrepreneur.
I like that.
And it's for Gen Z. Yeah. So I could share the article if you want to put it in the,
please do. Yeah. We can drop it in the feed. I'd love that. Well, man, that's a good thought for us to land. Get yourself a mentor and have people around you who can speak into your life and your journey that maybe have some experience you've not encountered yet. So, man, that's a good parting word from you. Thank you so much for coming on and being with us. Always a joy to talk to you, and we'll look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it. You have a great day.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Leadership Level Up. Please subscribe so you don't miss future conversations with great leaders.